You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers today. We have to do it. We have to talk about that loss to the Charlotte Hornets that happened last night. I know a lot of people want to forget this basketball game ever happened, but we got to do it. And I want to talk about, you know, the overtime and crunch time offense and the center situation in a segment two, and then look a little bit at the Wizards coming up tonight. So for those who somehow have not seen anything, the score, the headlines, the whatever, the Pacers in Charlotte lose to the Hornets 120-122 in overtime. They were dominating in the first quarter. I believe they were up 27-9 at one point, maybe 25-9. I don't remember. It looks like their lead was 17 at its peak. So maybe it was 26-9. No, it was 19 at its peak, but that was in the second quarter. Hornets ended up getting it to like 4 or 3 late second, though. They wanted a big run there. And then the Pacers got it back up to the 14 to start the fourth. And then the Hornets were in the lead in the fourth, and the Pacers caught back up, and they blew it in overtime. So they just had the worst run ever in the fourth. I believe it was 24-4 is what it came down to start the fourth quarter. And that was the deciding factor of the game. Now I want to address something early that is not the deciding factor of the game before people get all up in arms. There was a ginormous foul shooting discrepancy in this game. The Pacers took 7 free throw attempts. Hit 6 of them. 5 of those came from Brogdon because he was one of the only guys driving to the rim. The Hornets took 42 free throws in this game. 15 of them from Devontae Graham, who had himself a monstrous 35-point game. He was excellent. It really, you know, that's a huge discrepancy. And a lot of it is the Pacers had fouls coming left and right from Goga. He had 6. Jakarr Sampson had 5. And TJ Leaf had 6 because the Hornets guards were really getting inside. And all 3 of those guys are inexperienced at center, and that kind of falls back on the right. Sabonis and Turner did not play in this game. They're both hurt. So you're having guys who, we have 1 rookie and 2 guys who have not typically played center playing at center, right? Like that doesn't work very well. And that, you know, that as good as they are protecting the rim, they're going to make young mistakes. And in this game, you know, the Hornets just said, we're going to go at you over and over and over. And Rozier was able to get 5 free throws. Cody Zeller got 6 free throws. PJ Washington got 4. Biyombo got 8. Like, these guys were just hacking the big guys and the guys driving right at them over and over. Now, 42-7 is a big discrepancy. And I know almost all of it can be explained by legitimate fouls. You know, that puts him in the bonus earlier and things like that. But there were some not awesome fouls. Goga set a screen in the fourth quarter, and Cody Martin, I think, or Caleb Martin, whatever Martin brother, flopped off of him, and that was his 5th foul. And Aaron Holiday got a dumb one in overtime, and the one at the buzzer, so the last play of the game, the Hornets threw it into Biyombo, who threw it back to Devontae Green. Excuse me, it might have just gone right to Devontae Green, but the point was he would dribble up from a screen and try to drive to the basket, and he ran straight into Jakarr Sampson, and it was apparently a foul on Jakarr Sampson. It was not a foul. But a lot of the fouls were legitimate, and it was just like young centers fouling a lot, and that it was too many. I think the discrepancy was a little too big, but that wasn't the reason they lost. They lost because they blew a 19-point lead to start the fourth quarter, and that's really where the game got away from them. Was in that 24-4 run. It started off like not so bad, right? It was a nice little this is kind of one of those weird ones where in retrospect you look back and they start off with a 10-2 run, right? And in the first however many minutes, I think McMillan called a timeout at, let's see, 9. Nope, that's a referee thing. Nate McMillan called a timeout at the 9-something mark. I can't find it, though, because apparently I don't know how to use this. Okay, the first timeout came at the 7:49 mark, excuse me. So the Charlotte starts off with a 4-2 run, right? And you score, you know? You get a T.J. Warren hits a layup. Oh, this is the first quarter, no wonder. That timeout felt wrong, stupid computer. Okay, McMillan called the timeout at 9:34, like I was saying. So that's what I thought. The quarter starts off, the Hornets score again, and then Justin Holiday makes a driving layup. You know, it's 2-4. You don't call a timeout for that. And then a quick 6-0 run by Charlotte, and then you call a timeout. So it looks really bad at 10-2, like, wow, how did you not stop this bleeding? But really, it was 4-2 and then 6-0, and 6-0 doesn't seem so bad, right? So you don't make subs right away. Brogdon was the only sub that came in. They stuck with the bench, and then the Hornets just kept chipping at it and chipping at it, and they got the lead. And then he made another sub and brought in Jeremy Lamb and the other Holiday, actually. And it was kind of just odd because it was just a bunch of little runs that look huge in retrospect. They got another bucket to get to 96 when the Hornets still had 97. So the run at that point is 4 to something like, since the 4-2 run at the beginning, that's like, I can't even do math in my head. I'm just stupid right now. It's mushy brain right after that game. Okay, after the 4-2, that would be a 2-9 right there. Right, so that's bad, but that's not as bad. It was just like, in the summation, it looks horrible, but I get why they made the changes so slowly. But the Hornets got ahead, and the Pacers couldn't quite come back, and so they had to, you know, catch up in the clutch, and they did it. They had Aaron Holiday in with Goga, Malcolm Brogdon, Warren, and Lamb, and Warren had a great game, but somehow this lineup was working, right? They were getting enough points from Brogdon and Warren, and then all of a sudden, you look down, 2 minutes to go, and they're tied, and then a minute 15 to go, and they're tied. But then TJ Warren decided he was going to try to take over this game, and it did not go well. He had two terrible shots down the stretch of this one, and that really hurt the team, just not getting those looks. They had to get a layup from Brogdon down the stretch to keep the game tied. They had a chance to win it at the end, but it was not a good look for Brogdon. So their clutch lineup was, or their clutch offense, which I think should have been running through Brogdon, because, or Lamb even, because Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier were the two guys guarding those two. They should have been getting the isolation calls, in my opinion. Warren, for his part, had a great, great game, very efficient up to that point. He had 32 points on 16 shots at that point in time. But he's not the ISO guy with Dwayne Bacon on him, right? He was scoring a few isolation buckets like that, but when the defense is really zoned in on one guy, it's a lot harder, and Biombo was in for his defense, so the rim wasn't as easy to get to as when Cody Zeller was in, and I think they needed to mix up who was the guy attacking at that point in time. It was not working, and they lost. They just lost. They had a horrible fourth quarter. In overtime, they did okay, but again, a rinky-dink foul at the end. They were tied up to that point, costing the game. They couldn't even get a good look up at the end, so tough one to swallow from pretty much any perspective. If you're a diehard fan, you can blame the refs. If you're a smaller fan, you can blame the early fourth. If you're not a fan at all and you're, you know, just looking from a neutral perspective, it's just tough because you know the injuries make it they would have won. It's just a tough one. And now they have to come and play a back-to-back the next day, which is terrible. But I want to talk about some individual performances now. So let's do that. So for as bad as TJ Warren's clutch offense was, the rest of his offense was ridiculously good. Just nuts. He, at one point, had 30 points on 15 shots without attempting a free throw, right? So that's 2 points per shot with no free throw attempts. That's how crazy he was. He was 14 for 15 shooting at that time, made both of his threes. He looked awesome. He was driving in for these, or not really in, he was driving to his spots in the mid-range. He was hitting the threes within the rhythm of the offense. He even had three assists, like he was passing a little bit. Warren looked fantastic in this basketball game. That makes two games in a row where he has been a hub of offense. He was sensational. If only he, you know, hadn't forced it down the stretch. Two of his three misses were two of the last couple possessions of the game. I mean, that really hurt the total performance that he had. And Jeremy Lamb, the other guy, you know, former Hornet against his old team, didn't have the most efficient game, 18 points on 19 shots, but he had a ton of clutch buckets in overtime, and he also was driving well. This is a little complaint I had. He had Devontae Graham on him, and Graham was an awesome offensive player, so I get why James Borrego and the Hornets wanted to keep him in, but Lamb's much taller than him, and they kept giving Lamb the ball, and then he'd call for a screen. And because the Pacers were in foul trouble with their centers, they weren't having a center screen. They'd have Warren screen or Brogdon screen. But then he was getting switched onto a bigger guard or a wing, and he didn't have as much of a matchup advantage, and it made it a little harder for him. That was perplexing for me that they kept going to that. But Warren had some nice shots down the stretch to keep him in it, him and Brogdon both. Brogdon was great the whole game, of course. It happened again, like I said on yesterday's show, where, you know, in the fourth quarter, I just don't even think about the Pacers lead or how far they're behind if it's a close game, because I just think, okay, their advantage will come when they put Brogdon in for McConnell or Holiday or whoever, and sure enough it did. You know, the Hornets go on this massive run with McConnell in. They sub to Brogdon early, and the run kept going a little bit, but it was much less mitigated than Brogdon kept him in it and got him to overtime, right? Like, they couldn't lose with him out there, but then in overtime it didn't matter because it was a different game at that point. But he did fantastic. 31 points. Drove to the basket whenever he wanted. 8 assists as well. He had a few too many turnovers, but overall he played a really nice basketball game. He continues to just be ridiculous this season. I mean, it's hard to not imagine him not being an all-star, assuming he can keep up this level of production. So the backcourt starters were good. The front court, which I asked for nicknames on Twitter for the Bitadze Samson front court while Turner and Sabonis are out. And I got Baba Jaga, and that's my favorite one, right? It's like half Bitadze, half I don't even know what the Ba comes from, and then half Jakar, half Goga is Baba Jaga. I love it. So the Baba Jaga front court started this game, and you know, Goga has his moments all the time. He looks okay protecting the rim. He had 11 rebounds, but the fouls were bad. And Samson, for his part, had 5 fouls as well. You know, he's this high-energy guy. He didn't play very well. And then off the bench, Leaf did not do well at all. Seems like that center game he had that won them against the Bulls was not there in this one. Tonight he had 6 fouls, 0 points, 3 rebounds. That is not very good. He only got 1 shot up at all. So they really didn't get anything from the front court, and that sunk him in this game because Biombo was just easily scooping up rebounds. He got a ton of free throw attempts. It felt like just getting tiny. Yeah, he had 8, just getting tiny hacks inside. He actually had 15 points. Biombo played pretty well. And Cody Zeller played okay too, but he didn't play as much. He just was clogging things up, sending good screens, things like that. So they got killed there, and then their bench guards didn't offer a ton, right? McConnell, 0 assists, 3 turnovers, the opposite of what you need from him. Holiday, 2 for 7, shooting only 6 points, although he was distributing much better. He actually got the crunch time call this time because he played better. Justin Holiday, 5 points on 6 shots as well, not good enough. And then McDermott hit half his 3, so I guess it was a fine game for him, but he's a little banged up. I wonder if that affected him at all, but he played fine. So really, they didn't get much from their bench or their front court at all, and when you don't have your 3 best players, that's just not going to cut it. And especially when you give up giant runs to start the fourth, because they looked good in the first. They were up big early, and then I wonder if this is a shout-out to Mark Monteith here. This is his thing. He calls them theorem games, where teams get complacent when they get up early and they don't play as hard or as focused as they should, and they give it up when teams are kind of evenly matched. I wonder if this is a theorem game from 2, 3, and 3 teams at this point in time, because they just looked sloppy down the stretch and they couldn't pull it off. So that's a tough one to swallow for the Pacers. You know, they got to beat the Hornets if they want to get to the record they want to have this year. The Hornets are not supposed to be very good. They didn't play super awesome for like 70% of this game. So that one's tough. And it was night one of a back-to-back, which makes it even tougher because now the Pacers have to travel to Indy after overtime in a big minutes for some of their starters and then play again against the Washington Wizards, who I believe won their last game. They did against the Pistons. So let's talk some Wizards ahead of tonight's game. Before we talk about the Wizards, we have to talk about MyBookie, the best thing in the world. Some of you might think the Hornets refs were using MyBookie. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Please do not quote me on that. But pro and college basketball is finally overlapping. One of the best times of year. Just got my first IU tickets. Really excited about the season. There's no better way to feel a part of the action than having a stake in the game. And the best way to do that is with MyBookie at MyBookie.ag. If you like to play and win a lot, you can do parlays there. You know, if you like a bunch of the big favorites, put them all together, win some more money. MyBookie lets you do that where some sites don't. You can use your basketball knowledge to prove that you know more than others, and you can get paid if you really want to do so, which you should because it's awesome. You go to mybookie.ag, use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and they will double your cash. You can use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. That is to at your first deposit. So go check them out at mybookie.ag. Remember that code is LOCKEDONNBA to let them know that you came from us. Mybookie.ag, code LOCKEDONNBA. So the Wizards, 2-4, not good. Bradley Beal, though, very good. And that's kind of the starting point for the Wizards in this game is what's the plan here? What's the plan to slow down this guy? Because I can see a scenario where you say, we put Jeremy Lamb on him. We want Malcolm Brogdon to have as much energy as possible. Tonight, two of a back-to-back. Spoiler, the Wizards are now starting Isaiah Thomas, right? So Isaiah Thomas is going to be guarding either a very tall Malcolm Brogdon, or a much taller than him Malcolm Brogdon, or a much taller than him Jeremy Lamb. Either way, you are getting a mismatch there. And I wonder if they just try to throw Brogdon on Beal, because they know they can get a ton out of Lamb, and then they can slow down Beal much more. Whereas if you put Lamb on Beal and try to let Brogdon do offense, you're not gaining as much because, you know, Lamb can still just score easily on Isaiah Thomas. So I wonder if that's what they do, though. I don't know. But that's a lot of this game's intrigue to me, is the cross match with Bradley Beal, because Thomas Bryant, love the dude, IU guy, has finally found his niche in the NBA, just being this effort center who's okay on the glass. Like, he doesn't really scare you that much. You know, he's kind of sloppy at times and stuff like that. He's kind of a high turnover guy for a center who doesn't get the ball much outside of play finishing. You know, they start a rookie on the wing in Achimura. Isaac Bonga's young and a rookie. He starts for them too. Like, well, he's actually a second year player technically, but he might as well be a rookie. You know, they just, outside of Beal, they don't have anything that scares you as a defense. So they got to find a way to stop him. And what could go in their favor as well, you know, if Turner's back, this is good for him. You know, he can plant inside on Bryant, and it's a good, nice way to ease yourself back in when you only have to worry about one guy. And if it's just Sabonis back, he can score 70, whatever. He can score a ton of points on Thomas Bryant, no problem. So if just one of the centers is back, that'd be good. I mean, it'd be nice to have both. They were both questionable in this Hornets game, so maybe they'll be ready to go for this one. But yeah, if Beal's the only matchup that scares you, it's a good, nice way to ease in some injured players. I wonder if that was any of the decision-making process in Charlotte, not playing the two questionable big men. Because outside of the starters, right, the Ish Smith plays some big minutes for this Wizards team. He was starting until Isaiah Thomas started to get the call. But Ish Smith is just really fast and can kind of pass. He's not going to score many points. Troy Brown, second-year player, inexperienced. Mo Wagner, second-year player, inexperienced. Admiral Schofield, rookie, inexperienced. Like, their bench just does not have much. There's C.J. Miles is there. We all know about him. He's just more of a finisher at this point. You just got to stay home on him. So their bench is also not very good. If the Pacers cannot bleed points those minutes, literally all they have to do to win is slow down Bradley Beal. And that's why I'm so interested in that cross match, because that could be the whole game. It literally could be the whole game. From a Wizards standpoint, you know, they're going to try to slow down the front court because I think they're weaker there. But if, you know, if Sabonis and Turner aren't playing again and you've got Baba Jaga starting, that could be easier for them, right? Like, Jakar, for all the stuff I love him for, cannot get you offense. He can finish something, you know, from the dunker roll or whatever. But I don't think he's shot outside of corner threes. I don't think he's shot the ball outside of the paint this whole season. He's not going to get you points. And then Goga, still a rookie. It's kind of hard to predict what you're going to get from him. So if it is those two, that would not be great, especially with Leaf struggling all year, except for outside of one game. So they'll need to do well on Beal to guarantee that they'll be in it and winning it. Because if they don't do well on Beal and they don't have their two centers still, they might be in trouble. He's a beast. I mean, he's averaging 26.5 points a game and he's shooting poorly. So if he has if his shot's falling for once, he could have 35, 40-ish. He gets a lot of shots for this team. They let him shoot over 20 a game. His usage rate is a 34.1. That's higher than Vic's has ever been for the Pacers. That's just nuts. They only have two other guys above 20 that play in the rotation, and one's Mo Wagner, who's their bench hub. The other one is Rui, who they're trying to develop. So Siri has decided to join the show. So yeah, I just think, can they cross match Bradley Beal? That's all it's going to come down to. We'll see if the centers are going to play between Domas and Turner. I think it's interesting that Turner went from, you know, 2 weeks to he was doubtful before this Hornets game to questionable on game day. It seems like he's progressing pretty fast. Videos of him at practice, he doesn't have like a brace or anything, and he's running pretty smoothly. So maybe he'll be back this game. Maybe they'll just say, thanks for traveling, take the day off, get rest, and then be ready to go for the weekend. That wouldn't surprise me. Domas is weird too, because a lot of his problem was swelling and pain. If it's just not going away, it's not going away. So who knows how long those strains can last, but the more of those guys get they get back, the better, because the Wizards are young and inexperienced, and they don't really play stretchy inside the paint guys, which could help if they're both back. So it should be interesting. I think the Pacers should still win, even on a back-to-back, but I thought they should win against the Hornets too, and they did not. So we'll have to see how it goes. Hopefully this loss doesn't affect anything at any point in time. I mean, they lose in Charlotte all the time. That was their sixth loss in their last seven games in Charlotte, which is crazy. I actually was thinking that before the game, right? I remember they lost once last year, and I remember they lost the Dan Burke game, and I was like, wow, they lose a lot in Charlotte for usually being the better team. And then they said that on the broadcast, and it made me feel better for feeling that way. That's not the reason they lost. That's not an excuse. It's just the situation at hand. So, yeah, should be a fun one with the Wizards tonight. They're a fun team despite being pretty bad. You know, Isaiah Thomas is fun. Bradley Beal's fun. I didn't even mention Davis Bertans this whole time, who's hitting like a million threes a game. He's fun. Rui is fun. So, should be a fun – hey, I just said fun 1,000 times. Fun game. Speaking of fun, my Twitter account is fun. You can follow me at TEastNBA. You can follow this podcast at Locked On Pacers. Adam will have the recap of the Wizards and a preview of the weekend's games coming up later this week. You guys can tune in for that. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you soon.